Greeny with Mike Greenberg, the podcast.
Along with Hembo, Evan Cohen in for Greeny today. Normally you hear me with Chris Canty, Michelle Smallman, 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern here on ESPN Radio for Unsportsmanlike. In just a few minutes, we have a pretty big update on the Kentucky basketball job, which we will get to in just a few. But if you are just tuning in, major breaking news as O.J. Simpson's family has released a statement letting the world know that Simpson, at 76 years old, has passed. He died yesterday as a result of cancer. And I want to make sure that people understand the evolution of this man's life and career, because the reason it got so big on so many levels, the horrible tragedy with Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman, stems back to the fact that he originally played a sport and he had a charisma about him playing that sport at a dominant level that only can be resembled by people like Michael Strahan and The Rock, who did something at such a high level and an all-time level with a smile on their face to then catapult them into that place of post athletic stardom like we've never seen. O.J. Simpson was a Heisman Trophy winner at USC. O.J. Simpson for the Buffalo Bills was the best running back in the NFL, and for a while was the best running back maybe ever that people would ever look at. He then has the opportunity post-playing. I believe he played a year for the Niners, maybe two or whatever it was late in his career, 2 years for the Niners. Those are the two teams he played for, the Bills and the Niners. And then after that, he was the endorser for so many products all over the place, and he was the person that every business wanted to represent their brand. He was in movies like Naked Gun and playing roles, and he was on NBC Sports. I believe he was on Monday Night Football as well. This was the person, like Michael Strahan, that was a Hall of Famer at football or in football, and that everyone wanted on their airwaves and to represent their brand. But then everything crashed down with a horrific tragedy that he was accused of. And that was the killing of his wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her friend, Ronald Goldman. And O.J. Simpson was accused of those murders, the double homicide. He was supposed to turn himself in, as you see with the O.J. Made in America 5-part 30 for 30 that is available on ESPN Plus, that you can watch all of this and everything that goes into this. He was accused of those murders. He was charged with killing them initially, or brought up on charges of killing them, and then did not report, as his legal team said he would report, to the police. Goes on that chase. Al Cowlings, his former teammate, is in the car with him. We break into an NBA Finals game between the Knicks and the Rockets, and literally the NBA Finals is not shown for part of that game because O.J. Simpson is on this chase running from cops. Again, I hate to do this to Michael Strahan and to The Rock. It is not fair to them, but I'm trying to equate the level of significance of them. Imagine in a God forbid scenario, all of a sudden we're breaking into programming where police are chasing The Rock all over California and looking to arrest him for double homicide. It is unfathomable to think of, and The Rock would never do something like that, but that is the level of stardom we were looking at. Obviously, he was acquitted of murder, double homicide. His legal team included countless famous people, including Robert Kardashian, whose wife at the time, Kris Jenner, Kris Kardashian, gave birth to all of the children, obviously, that we know of today, Kim Kardashian, Khloe, etc. And the story lives on forever. And we will never look at O.J. Simpson the same way as we did then, obviously. Dies at 76 years old. And Hembo, what people may not understand, at its core, obviously, we are a sports show, right? And what we do here, we talk about sports. We laugh, we have fun. This is not a laughing matter in terms of what he did, allegedly did in his life. But from a sports perspective, you pride yourself and you're better than anyone at actually breaking things down based on numbers. Irrelevant in the grand scheme of things, but for context, how good of a football player was he?
One of the greatest football players that ever lived. O.J. Simpson is on a really, really short list of the greatest running backs in the history of the NFL. He was obviously a generational superstar at the University of Southern California, where he won the Heisman Trophy. He did so in 1968. And in the NFL, he became the first back in league history to rush for 2,000 yards in a season. He did that while winning the MVP in 1973. He's the only player to rush for 2,000 yards in a 14-game season. And keep in mind the significance of this. I don't need to tell you this, but for context, the early 70s were still a time in which the face of the NFL was not exclusively the quarterbacks. O.J. Simpson, to this day, remains the greatest player in the history of the Buffalo Bills, and I think you could make a cogent argument that in the early 70s, he was, if not a face, perhaps even the face of the NFL. From 72 to 76, a five-season span, he ran for nearly 8,000 yards. Again, these are all 14-game season. You can't really overstate O.J. Simpson's greatness as a football player. His prime was utterly magnificent. And we say this not to contextualize his life in a positive way necessarily, but to contextualize why the murder trial that subsequently occurred was such a seismic event in this country.
If we're going to be real and honest about things, when people pass, there's a level of sympathy, your heart goes out to them, et cetera, et cetera. When people that are assumed to have done evil, your heart and your mind go to a weird place. I'll leave it at that. This is not someone that universally every single person is going to say, I'm so sorry, condolences to the family. That is not what is going to happen today. People are going to rightfully discuss the complicated, tragic life that this man lived, what he allegedly may have done to others, and how he treated people. But the reason of significance, initially, before we even dove into the legal system, race, gender, ethnicity, that was part of the trial and the reaction to the trial. Initially, this was a person that was really good at football and smiled while doing it. And then everyone wanted that infectious smile around their brand and their business. Every business since then is probably embarrassed that they had him as part of their brand and their business. He was acquitted of the murders, but is civilly liable for them. July will be the 30th anniversary of the chase.
Wow. Wow. So in January of 95, again, after pleading not guilty in July of 94, Simpson's criminal trial began and lasted for over 250 days.
And it was the number one story in our country all of those days.
I need you to walk me through that then. I was four or five years old.
Let's have
at the
Bubba
time.
Jump in here as well, because he and I are around the same age.
I don't have any grasp of having lived that at all, so I'm dying to hear what you guys have to
Bubba,
say.
Bubba, correct me if I am wrong in my assessment of this. Mm. It was the number one story in our country every single day, yep, at a time where we did not have social media and constant updates. We also, correct me if I'm wrong, did not have Court TV. I believe Court TV was birthed out of that.
I was just going to say, I think they created Court TV out of this.
So what? Wow. The reason that we point that out, Hembo, for you and others that were not living through this, is 24/7 coverage on all of the networks, disrupting everything else that was going on with no alternative place for it. Meaning, if there was a sports story that was relevant of 24/7 coverage, we are fortunate enough at ESPN to have so many different outlets to do. We could put it on ESPN Plus on a live stream of something, like we have the Masters right now, but or when it starts, you know what I'm saying. Like that, there was none of that. So it had to disrupt literally everything else going on. Everyone, regardless of age, had an opinion on it. And it evolved in a way that it was a referendum on the law, on race, on the overall mentality, on sports, on branding. You know, should you have the former athlete representing you? Oh, athletes could do – no, athletes couldn't do this. He could do this. Am I assessing it properly retroactively here, Bubba?
Yeah, I mean, I think it basically – obviously, we didn't have social media then. But besides that, you can almost argue it had the same coverage as you would today if there was the 24-hour social media, reaction, because it was just a nonstop, like you said. And every newspaper had it. Every news station had it. The morning news, the afternoon news, the night news. ESPN, CNN, whatever it was. And then, like you said, the stations were just breaking into it constantly, breaking into it during the finals, whatever it was. You know, I was in middle school. My friends were talking. We didn't even know what we were necessarily talking about, but we were talking about it because it's literally just every day you get home and people are referencing it. And you just couldn't escape it. Just like now, if something was I mean, this was like the first, you know, one of the first things of trending before trending was even possible. And it was just nonstop. You couldn't get away from it. And it was just everywhere.
Why do you think it got that big in your mind?
Probably because of the things you said earlier, not only of how great of a football player he was, but essentially everything he did, he was great at. I mean, he was great at football. And then later on, I mean, because obviously I don't remember his football career, but I remember him when he was a broadcaster, which he was just such a personable person. So he was great as a broadcaster, great as, you know, as an actor, and then doing all the commercials. He was just everywhere. And then to see someone, such a fall from grace, it was just unheard of to see someone such a big star like that. I mean, it wasn't just an athlete who was, you know, accused of murder. It was an athlete who was in everyone's home doing everything, you know, commercials, broadcasting, and he was just everywhere. And so I think that's why it just, because again, it wasn't just the sports fans. It was the moms knew who he was because he was in the commercials. Literally every person, no matter what demographic you were, knew who OJ was and basically had a feeling about him, good, bad, or indifferent. And I think that's why it just took over everyone's you know, feelings.
I think that is perfectly summarized in many ways. And I think that one thing you said, which is just, it's crazy to say now, considering when I think about him, I'm not thinking positively. I'm sorry. I'm just like, I don't want to go there. But the idea that good at everything is really what this guy was. I mean, honestly, it's really... it was unfathomable that somebody could be an expert and perform the way that he did as a football player and then just snap his fingers and be like, okay, now I'm going to be the best broadcaster.
Right.
And I'm going to be an actor in hit movies. And then do that, allegedly, those horrific acts. Thankfully, we will never see a story like this again, I don't think, in our world, hopefully, because I think we are more careful in propping people up than we've ever been.
You think so?
And we're quicker to tear them down, I will say that. Mm. And that may not be appropriate, but we are, however you want to look at it. I guess his story is not one that is one straight line of easy conversation. That's not what it is. It is a complicated conversation to have because of the fact that, again, when someone dies, the words sympathy and prayers, thoughts and prayers, condolences are used. I'll just talk about what he did and allegedly did.
Sure.
Not going to go to the place that I just went to.
I will always believe that O.J. Simpson's charismatic nature and the fact that the trial of the century was televised went a long way in the verdict being what the verdict was. And that's because over that period of time, over those 250 days, his outstanding lawyers, including Johnny Cochran, of course, did an excellent job of changing the narrative. It went from being, you know, just the facts, of course, into a flashpoint for everything else. There were so many attributes of O.J. Simpson in the trial than just transcended the facts on the ground. I mean, the facts on the ground wind up being a fairly tangential part of the trial. I mean, if you watch the trial over again, or at least look through some of the highlights, and I think that 5-part documentary is absolutely outstanding in articulating this, so much of the conversation had nothing to do with what actually happened or allegedly happened. So much of it had to do with race and with preconceptions about people. And things that his lawyers were able to extract from the American public, you might say, in making him, at least in some worlds, a sympathetic figure, as remarkable as that is.
Well, because they were trying to prove him not guilty.
I think that's different than innocence.
Of course.
You can even argue today, and I mean, that's obviously not right, but there are a ton of people that still like support him. And even on Twitter, he was so popular on Twitter because, just going back to, again, everything he was just so personable, and people liked it. You know, obviously, you know, the vast majority of people did not like him and were angry at him, but still, he was still able just to go out there, and even after all the stuff he did, he could still gather that art. He could still have autograph signings. He could still do all these different things. And every time he would do something insanely dumb and do a book and a dumb reality show and capitalize off all this stuff, and everyone, it was just so egregious and wrong. But then he would just, you know, come out there and smile and laugh and talk, and he would just grab people again because he was just so personable. And, like, still, he would.
Wasn't he doing the Cameron and Mace podcast that they're doing?
I think so, yeah.
And he was still working with me, and I think you're right, I don't know.
He was on Twitter just last, a couple months, you know, he would always post those videos on Twitter, and obviously it was, you know, split fit. Some people obviously hated it.
Yeah, but there I wouldn't watch.
Plenty of people that were like, oh, he's so funny on Twitter, I love this guy on Twitter, and I think that just shows, because obviously everyone knows what he allegedly did, but they just couldn't get past how, you know, how personable he was, and it's just crazy. All like right. That just explains how popular it was.
Yes, he was on Cameron and Mace's podcast for the last 3 or 4 months. They hired him in like December,
so like
they
NFL
had
analysts,
him on
right?
almost weekly. Yeah. This is a few months ago.
That's not going to happen with any other. I can't think of any other necessarily alleged killer who's going out on, you know, that people just are in love with, you know. But he's just got such a different personality.
Well, and Bubba,
people literally gravitate to him.
I think that what Cam just said is important. Hired, right? Like, I could see an accused murderer as a guest where somebody wants to interview them to get to the bottom of something, but not hired as a contributor.
He made a fortune after all this stuff. He didn't pay any of it to Goldman's, but he made a fortune.
All right, it is Greeny here on ESPN Radio. Starting Stronger starts at AutoZone, where they've got battery solutions in the form of free battery testing, free battery charging, and replacement batteries that fit your needs. That's what makes them America's number one battery destination. Get in the zone, AutoZone. A lot of conversation, obviously, has changed on our show today on Greeny here on ESPN Radio. With the passing of O.J. Simpson, we do want to bring up major college basketball news, and that is per Pete Thamel, ESPN.com, as first reported by CBS Sports. Scott Drew has decided to stay at Baylor, turning down Kentucky. So that means what we know right now. John Calipari voluntarily left Kentucky-ish. Danny Hurley turned Kentucky down. And Scott Drew has turned Kentucky down. Billy Donovan has not said yes nor said no. Alabama's Nate Oates turned Kentucky down. Or at least took his name out of it even before maybe he was in on it. Who's going to be the Kentucky head coach? We don't know at this point. Jeremy Schapp, phenomenal ESPN reporter, is going to join us next to talk about the passing at 76 years old of O.J. Simpson. This is Greeny on ESPN Radio.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Greeny today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Greeny, GREENY.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Greeny, the podcast.
It is Greeny here on ESPN Radio. We are presented by Progressive Insurance, along with Hembo, Evan Cohen in for Greeny today. O.J. Simpson's family has announced at 76 years old, he has passed away because of cancer. Obviously, as complicated of a story as there is in sports history, and it's way greater than sports. Jeremy Schapp, ESPN, phenomenal journalist, reporter, storyteller, joins us now to talk more about this. Jeremy, thank you so much for a couple of minutes. How would you describe the legacy of O.J. Simpson?
Well, that's a good question. And I think a lot of us are thinking about it. I think the best way to put it, Evan, is that everything that came before June of 1994 was clearly superseded by the murders that took place then. The murders of Nicole Brown Simpson, O.J. Simpson's ex-wife, and Ron Goldman. And while O.J. was acquitted in the criminal trial, he was found liable in the civil case for their deaths, two brutal murders. And, the legacy, the totality of it, it encompasses more than O.J. himself. Because those murders led to the trial of the century, and there were so many issues at play in the trial itself that, again, transcended O.J. So we think about all of that. We think about O.J. Simpson, the football player, the corporate pitchman, the brand, this ubiquitous presence in American public life. From 1967, 1968, when he had those amazing years at USC, those 2 years at USC, and then he was an incredible running back in the National Football League, primarily for the Buffalo Bills, also for the San Francisco 49ers. But, he was a great football player, but the murder trials are what we are going to remember, and the crimes themselves.
Jeremy, you alluded to it a little bit. Can you describe in your mind who he was at his peak and who he was at his valley?
Well, I think, that's really the heart of it, right? Who was O.J.? He clearly wasn't the person that most Americans, most people thought he was. He was this, he was the Hertz guy. He was Mr. Affability. He was Mr. I could sell you anything. He was in, movies like, all kinds of movies. He had fun with his persona. And he was someone, who did not get involved very much with the political issues of his time. He was not someone, who was fighting for civil rights in that era the way that Bill Russell or Jim Brown or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was. That was not O.J. Simpson. O.J. Simpson was corporate. I'll never forget this, right? So maybe just a few days after the murders took place, I was out in Los Angeles covering, the story, the investigation, the arrest, the chase, the murders, all that. And I was working with Andrea Kramer, the longtime ESPN reporter, and we went to Jim Brown's house. To interview Jim Brown about O.J. Simpson. And I remember sitting down across from Jim, and Jim said, I don't remember the exact words verbatim, but he said words to the effect of pointing at the camera, is that thing on? And I indicated to him, yes, we're rolling. And he looked right into the camera, past me, past Andrea, and said, O.J., once in your life, be a man and admit what you did. And I mean, that's a pretty loaded statement, right? And you know, I don't think we used it. It might have been too prejudicial, too presumptive, however you want to characterize it. But it gives you a sense of how Jim Brown felt about O.J. Simpson. And Jim Brown was far from an angel, as we know as well. And so there's so much here that's complicated. The thing that I keep coming back to is the shock in that moment, based on who we thought O.J. Simpson was, despite the evidence to the contrary that had been out there and had largely been ignored, who he was, and then we find ourselves following this murder investigation, these brutal murders. And for me personally, you know, I was out in Chicago 48 hours, maybe less after it happened, 72 hours, whatever it was, around the grounds of the hotel where O.J. stayed the night the murders took place in Chicago after he flew there, you know, where they were searching for evidence. And now I'm in a field out by O'Hare Airport, and you know, the authorities are looking for the murder weapon. And you're thinking to yourself, whoa, this is O.J. Simpson we're talking about. O.J. Simpson. I mean, the shock, it's hard to put into words now, 30 years later, how great it was.
We're talking with ESPN's Jeremy Schaaf here on Greeny on ESPN Radio, along with Hembo, Evan Cohen, in for Greeny today. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. That Jim Brown story is phenomenal to think about, because it indicates, obviously, previous lies, previous deceit. Also, and I know Hembo is going to jump in a second, Jeremy, but I just want to point out, like, what I've been saying for the younger generation, and I hate even doing this, but the only comps I have made would be the feelings we properly have about The Rock and Michael Strahan were the feelings we had about O.J. Simpson post their athletic career dominating a world of broadcast and entertainment and branding in a way that put a smile on everyone's face. That's who he was pre-June of 94.
That's right. He was, you know, as I said, he was ubiquitous. He was widely beloved. He was, you know, someone that, you know, the major brands in America were more than comfortable, you know, using to sell their products and their services. You know, he was on Monday Night Football. He was, you know, at the Olympics. You know, I worked the 92 Summer Olympics in Barcelona. You know, I was a researcher. You know, O.J. Simpson was one of those guys on air. He was as big as you could be, really, in American pop culture. And it transcended sports. And there was a particular O.J. brand. And yet, you know, there had been this history, right? You know, there had been incidents in his past that had been largely forgotten, swept under the rug. And people wanted to love O.J. He had very powerful friends as well. I apologize. I'm in Midtown Manhattan. Well, actually, the Upper West Side, so you hear the ambulance going by. You know, it's. Again, it's just hard to overstate the shock so many people felt when the murder, in the way I remember it, Evan, and again, it's been 30 years, but the way I really remember personally is when you first heard what had happened, that these murders had taken place in Brentwood, reaction was, oh, poor OJ, you know, the mother of his children, his ex-wife. And then over the next 24, 36 hours, it became clear that he was a suspect. And that was, yeah, it's almost impossible to fathom, you know, what that kind of reversal was like.
Jeremy, as a journalist, as a reporter, as someone who's done this for as long as you have, I'm curious, in looking back on the murder trial, what we sort of collectively as an industry may have learned from it, and how it shaped that profession, how it shaped journalism, the what we see today in that world. How much can be traced back to the way that that trial was covered and everything that has subsequently happened since?
Yeah, well, it was a circus, right? It was a huge circus. You know, I wouldn't say it was unprecedented. There had been other trials of the century, you know, whether you want to go back to Fatty Arbuckle in the 1920s, or the Lindbergh kidnapping in the 1930s, the atomic spy trials, the Rosenbergs. There had been trials of the century, and there had been tabloid journalism long before the O.J. Simpson trial took place, but it kind of elevated it to new heights, and it became a circus. And I think, you know, one of the things that has stuck with me all these years later is how the victims and the terrible deaths that they suffered all became secondary, right, to the noise and the fireworks and the celebrity and the star lawyers and the Johnny Cochran's and the Robert Shapiro's and the F. Lee Bailey's and the prosecution, all of it, you know, it became popcorn entertainment. And has it, you know, have we learned any lessons from it? I doubt it. You know, we don't really learn lessons, right? It's not like the media has improved itself since then. But it was ugly.
Okay, I got to do it. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of it. Was that a Curb reference you just made there in the midst of this? We don't learn lessons? Is that what just happened here?
I have no idea. I'm not caught up. I watched the end of...
That was literally the entire final episode. I'm like, Jeremy Schapp is already amazing.
Don't tell me. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, spoiler alert.
Oh, my bad. Okay. This is a serious matter, obviously.
I'm only up through, like, episode 6. Oh, was I channeling Larry David? I didn't even know. I'm sorry.
That's such a time.
I'm like, what an amazing drop you just made. All right, anyway. Back to serious matters at hand here, obviously. We're talking with Jeremy Schapp, ESPN, phenomenal ESPN reporter, giving us all the insight. If you're just tuning in, the passing of O.J. Simpson, complicated legacy, of course, 76 years old. Jeremy said it beautifully. Who he was prior to June of 94 was a lot different than who he was perception-wise after June of 94. Your late great father, Dick Schapp, in 2001 via CNN said, quote, "All of journalism is a shrinking art. So much of it is hype. The O.J. Simpson story is a landmark in the decline of journalism." What do you think he meant by that?
You know, I think he meant what I was talking about. You know, we were at that time, not in 94, 95, but starting in about 97, 98, hosting a radio show, an ESPN radio show together. And you know, we were covering the same events. And he had known O.J. You know, he wasn't close with O.J. in any way, but they had close mutual friends. And I think he was, you know, appalled by the way that this case was handled in the media. And again, you know, the word I keep coming back to, I think it's the word that everybody comes back to with the O.J. trial, is circus. And, you know, it was used to sell papers and to juice ratings. And look, that's right. This is not the Lawn Tennis Society. That's what journalism does. But at the expense of the seriousness of the situation and the seriousness and brutality and utter cruelty and suffered by those who were killed, Ron Goldman and Nicole Brown Simpson, and what their families were feeling. I mean, that's what I keep coming back to. It's, you know, it's just really ugly. You know, it's ugly what happened. And if you look at the evidence, and I know he wasn't convicted in a criminal trial, but he was found liable in the civil trials. If you look at the evidence, it's hard not to conclude that O.J. Simpson brutally, cruelly murdered two human beings. Right. And what else can what else could possibly matter when you think about it?
You couldn't be more right, and I will just tell people, if they didn't listen, and maybe you did or didn't, I don't know, Kim Goldman is the sister of Ronald Goldman, excuse me, and she did an interview years ago with Howard Stern that was so phenomenal because she talked for the entirety of the time about that part of it, about, like, we lose sight that two people were murdered, families lost loved ones, and that part of it, Jeremy, was just kind of, I don't want to say thrown to the side, but not focused on enough.
No, I think that's absolutely right. I think that's absolutely right. You know, it was about celebrity as much as anything else, right? And then, you know, that's the way things go sometimes. It's about celebrity. It's about, you know, OJ's star power and all of that. And it's a sad commentary.
Jeremy, thank you so much for the insight and the conversation. We really do appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
All right, there's Jeremy Schapp joining us here on ESPN Radio. Greeny, here on ESPN Radio. Can we lighten the mood for 1 second, though? Because it's obviously a serious conversation.
Mm-hmm.
We are all surprised that you don't call O.J. Orenthal.
And why is that?
If anyone would call him by his full name, it would be you, would it not?
It would absolutely be me.
Even though you literally go by a nickname in Hembo.
I do. That was not my choice, though.
Your choice? We didn't think you named yourself.
What I'm saying is it is not my choice to go by my corporate nickname. That was made by Mike Greenberg years ago.
What would you like to go by?
My name is Paul.
So you want
named after the apostle.
So we shouldn't call you Hembo.
You should call me Hembo because
can I call you Orenthal?
I suppose so.
Oren Paul?
I'm the likeliest person to call him Orenthal. There are probably a lot of people that don't know that's his actual name, right? OJ's OJ to everyone. Is that right?
Yes, I guess. Yeah.
I would imagine so.
To you. All right. There's also a lot of other stuff going on right now. Obviously, the significance of the passing of O.J. Simpson is enormous. The Masters is going on, as we know, as well as Scott Drew, Baylor head coach, is staying at Baylor. Kentucky, where are they going to go? Where is Kentucky going to go? We're going to dive into that coming up. If you're dealing with a dead battery, though, head to AutoZone, America's number one battery destination. They offer free battery services like free battery testing and free battery charging. Their free battery testing can help you know if you need a new battery or not, or if you need a fresh charge. And if you do happen to need a replacement battery, they can help with that too. And they're the only place you can find proven, tough, Duralast batteries. So next time you're having battery trouble, head to AutoZone, your battery solution, and America's number one battery destination. It is Greeny here on ESPN Radio.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season.
Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
Greeny, the podcast.
It is Greeny here on ESPN Radio, along with Hembo, Evan Cohen from Unsportsmanlike, 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern, Chris Canty, Michelle Smallman, in for Greeny today. If you miss any of our coverage of the O.J. Simpson passing, including our interview with reporter and historian Jeremy Schapp, you can catch both hours of the show and the Greeny podcast available daily wherever you get your podcasts. So make sure you check that out. On a much less serious note, as we've been talking about OJ all show, well, not all show, since it broke, we have our big lunch today, you and I.
Big lunch today. Big lunch today. Where are we going, by the way?
Yeah, we haven't figured that out.
That's a problem. I'm the kind of person that plans things a long time in advance.
Me too.
Like, I know what I'm eating at a restaurant.
How do we know?
Weeks before make a reservation.
So do we want to go casual? Fast casual, sit down.
Well, I mean, that's more your call because you're paying for this. And so I don't have...
I'm sorry, what was that?
Whoa, what was that?
You can choose where we go, or at least you can have the first piece of input because you're going to pay for the lunch. And thus, I don't want to pick a choice that would be...
Is this disgust that he's paying?
No, it was presumed above your pay grade and be that guy. Like, I don't want to be the guy that picks the expensive restaurant that someone else is paying
for. So where do you go with Greeny? The most expensive restaurant in all of New York City? It's no, not above his pay grade.
We always just go to the Tin Building, which is right next door. which is super expensive, but
I've been there.
You don't pay for it.
But I don't pay for it. So yes, the Tin Building would be fine.
But he has an interesting move I've learned about him today. You know what he does? This is a fascinating
about
move.
Me?
Yeah, yes.
Nothing about me is fascinating.
Okay, this one, Cam Bubba, here's what he does. He lets people pay for him at lunch and then later on gets them gift cards.
Sent me a gift card.
Right. So it's actually a trade that he actually masks as a gift. So he gets credit for being kind, but it really just is a trade. So in other words, like he went to a fast casual place with Rob Lorenzo, our social and digital guy. Rob paid. He then got him a gift card weeks later to the same fast casual restaurant.
You make Rob pay?
For a similar price as the payment of lunch, because he wants the big thank you from Rob after the fact. For actually getting the gift card. Wow, you went out of your way to do that. Mm-hmm. That's so sweet. Versus just splitting a bill.
Cam, what a selfless person.
What do you think of my strategy here? You have the other person pay, and then you pay them back in gift card form to get double credit for being a good person. What do you think? Do you think that works?
Until you're found out, which you just were. Greeny.
Good person's out the window.
Do you give Greeny gift cards? Doesn't he pay for your lunch like once a
week? Yeah, but Greeny's an exception, you know, given his 11-figure salary. Yeah. I think in Greeny's case, everything's sort of thrown out the window. But yes, Rob pays for lunch. I think I said something to the effect of, I'll Venmo you later or I'll get you next time.
And that was just a lie.
That's a lie. Then I do the gift card for even less than my burrito was in this case. And I feel like I am going to be elevated then because, oh, what a nice guy. Like I show up my email, there's a Chipotle gift card or wherever it was we went. I think that's a pretty shrewd move for someone as cheap as I am.
I don't even know where to go with this exactly.
Me neither.
Because I can't figure out if this is brilliant or yet another scheme.
It's both.
You live in that area where everything you do is either brilliant or a scheme. While you're really good at getting Greeny stats and information.
Very.
And you find yourself co-hosting with him on the radio and a part of a television show. Brilliant or a scheme? You use a parking discount that you're not eligible for.
Oh, I'm eligible.
Yet we're given... Brilliant or a scheme? You let other people pay for lunch and then pay them back by way of gift cards to get credit. Brilliant or a scheme?
Deceptive, manipulative. Would you describe me as either or?
Yes. Feeling great starts with a great shave, and great shave starts with Barbasol Shaving Cream. That's Barbasol Shaving Cream, an American classic for over 100 years. Close shave, America. Close shave, Barbasol. So here's what we've got.
I love their jingle, by the way. The Barbasol jingle's phenomenal.
Sing it.
Close shave America, close shave Barbasol. Drum.
Well done. All right. Now, again, brilliant or a scheme? Is he looking for an endorsement deal or he just likes their close shave? I don't know. So as first reported by CBS, Pete Thamel has put it out there, ESPN.com, that Scott Drew has turned down the Kentucky job. He's going to be the Baylor coach. Nate Oates, Alabama coach, also said, he is not interested in going to Kentucky. Danny Hurley said with Pat McAfee on ESPN that he is not going to Kentucky. Billy Donovan, head coach of the Chicago Bulls and a phenomenal Hall of Fame level college coach, won back-to-back championships at the University of Florida in 06 and 07, kind of left it gray in that they haven't contacted me yet, is basically what he said. Hembo, if you had to guess right now, who is the next head coach at Kentucky?
So... who is versus who should be might be two different people. I have a difficult time answering this question with any name aside from Rick Pitino because I'm just obsessed with the idea. I'm obsessed with the reunion. Do you
well,
give
which
any
one is he? The is or should be?
He's the should be. I think the is probably a lot more boring. Tommy Lloyd.
That's the Arizona coach.
The Arizona coach. I think that's more the kind of coach that they're going to attract. I really do. I think in my mind, the Kentucky head coaching job is one of the 5 or 10 best basketball coaching jobs on the planet, inclusive of women's college basketball and inclusive of the NBA. Kentucky basketball, you know this as well as anybody. You love the history of sports. That's royalty. That's being the head coach of the Steelers, managing the Yankees, of the Canadiens. I mean, that's, we're talking about the very best, the very top of the top. And yet... the very best candidates don't seem to have any interest in the job. It is very, very bizarre to me.
then it's not one of the best jobs in America.
It must. I must be wrong, is what I'm saying. I must be wrong about my characterization of that job.
I'm going to tell you the best college jobs. The best college jobs are the jobs at schools that the other sport at that school is bigger than the sport you're coaching. You have the same resources, budget, allocation of assets as the other sport with no pressure. Alabama basketball, North Carolina football, Duke football, Notre Dame basketball, USC basketball. You get what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying.
There is something about those jobs. You can have peace of mind, same amount of success. UConn men's basketball, not what women's basketball was for a long period of time. Think about it. The pressure cooker and the unrealistic expectations of the main job sometimes are absurd. Coming up, coverage of the passing of O.J. Simpson at age 76 continues right here on ESPN Radio. We are Greeny on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Thanks for listening to Greeny the podcast. You can listen live each weekday morning at 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio. Or watch the show through the Watch tab on the ESPN app. Also catch Greeny on Get Up, weekday mornings at 8 on ESPN. And also available wherever you get your podcast.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much up.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.